that we've enjoyed the meeting. But while here we've been struggling, it's not easy to get up with all the other brethren and sisters here. And my wife has to admonish me sometimes because I'll try to find a way to let the others talk and I listen. But we have a duty. We'd like to submit this to you and leave it for your consideration. It seems that some of the brethren have already touched on it. There's probably not much we can add to it, but we will do what we can. The songwriter said, be an overcomer. And there's one thing about it. You won't overcome if you don't engage the enemy. So as we endeavor to engage him this morning, we trust that what we have will be of some help to someone. Amen. As we go along the way. We'd like for each person to consider the question, or consider as you tune in to your own spiritual ears, whether you are saved or not saved, whether you were once upon a time saved, whether you are saved but not where you ought to be. We'd like for you to consider, when you listen to your spiritual ears, what do you hear? What do you find coming forth? And as we tune in and begin to consider, the Lord said, he that hath ears to hear, let him hear. We trust that you are hearing a call to battle. I thought about a song a long time ago, and I often wondered why it kept coming back to me. It's one that no doubt everyone knows, but don't think about very much. I'd like to share it with you. The writer said, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. I've seen him in the watchfires of 100 circling camps. They have builded him an altar in the evening dews and damps. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His day is marching on. He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never sound retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea. With the glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. While God is marching on. This song was written in response to a challenge. The songwriter was challenged by her husband as she saw some of the soldiers going out to fight in the Civil War. And they were singing a song that had this tune to it. But it was divisive. And so her husband challenged her to write a song with that tune that would call to unity. And in it, I've wondered, what did she really see when she said she saw the glory of the Lord's coming? In it, I've pondered, in this day and time, what kind of altars are we building as we stand before the Lord? Have we heard the sound of the trumpet that will never sound retreat? Are we in a place where our feet can swiftly move to answer him and be jubilant as we go along the way. And then to consider Christ as he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. They were fighting a physical battle, but I'm looking at something else. And as I consider that, I ask this question, what are you living for? What are you dying for? There is a call for young people, for middle-aged people, for the old people to take heed to the call to battle. It is not a time where the older ones can say, I've done my part, and now I can sit down. My children are gone on, and they're on their own. No, your work has just begun. To the middle age, there are some gaps. I thought about what was spoken of the other night about the baby boomers. And I consider this, and I hope you'll humor me and allow me, being younger. I remember a time where a couple of older brethren were telling me about some of the different ones who had gifts and how they were able to work for the Lord. And when I went away, I began to ponder that the people they were talking about had passed on long, some of them even before I was born. And I began to ponder and say, could I go and tell my children that I've seen somebody with these same gifts working in the same way? And I thought, I've never heard anybody claim some of these gifts. There are some gaps. Young people, we need someone like Caleb. We need some Joshuas. We're in need of some Elishas. And you can fill some of those places. There is a call. What will you and I do with it? Let us turn to Numbers, the 10th chapter, starting at the first verse. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, make thee two trumpets of silver. Of a whole piece shalt thou make them, that thou mayest use them for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps. And when they shall blow with them, all the assembly shall assemble themselves to thee at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And if they blow but with one trumpet, then the princes, which are heads of the thousands of Israel, shall gather themselves unto thee. When ye blow an alarm, then the camps that lie on the east parts shall go forward. When ye blow an alarm the second time, then the camps that lie on the south side shall take their journey. They shall blow an alarm for their journeys. But when the congregation is to be gathered together, ye shall blow, but ye shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be for you an ordinance for forever throughout your generations. And if ye go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, then ye shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies. Here we consider Moses receiving instructions, and they were to sound an alarm at various points, depending upon the situation that they were to encounter. But as I look upon this, we begin to consider that when the people heard, they moved to fill their place. And the time that the alarm came, then the one camp would move forward to some position. When the alarm came again, the next camp would move forward. And the Septuagint points out that they moved in the east and the north, the west and the south. And as they heard the alarms, they moved to fill their place. As you and I go down through this life today, do we hear the call? And are we moving to fill that place as we go along life's pathway? As we look here, we begin to consider, well, where are your places? And let us start at this point. To those of you who are amongst those that we call the singers,
Where is your purpose? And what is your intent? What are you doing to meet and fill that call as you go along the way? It is more than just getting up and singing and sitting down. But you and I should have a purpose as we go along life's pathway. There are those places where you can become an instrument to be used of the Lord to bring about victory in someone's life as they go along the way. All we find there that Jehoshaphat, when they were facing a battle, they were far outnumbered, but he brought forth the singers, placed them in front of the army, told them to go out, said, believe on the Lord and follow his prophets, so shall ye prosper. And so the singers went on out singing, praising the Lord for his mercy endureth forever. And the writer points out that there is never a time where they had such a complete and total victory and utterly destroyed their enemy as that time when the singers filled their place and they led them forth, pointing them back to God and showing them that he's the one who's our sufficiency and he's the one who will carry us through as we go along the way. Oh, as we consider it there, you never know what kind of an effect you're going to have upon someone by filling that place. In the Old Testament time, they had singers there who took care of giving praise to the Lord. The writer says, both day and night as they go along the way. And as we look upon that, I'd like to defend the singers just a little bit. Having been in that place, there are those times where you're going to find yourself caught in some crossfires as you go along the way. There have been those places where we've had people say different things and come against you in different ways. And sometimes maybe even find yourself being preached at. But you are to fill your place and go forth by the help of the Lord and do what he has for you to do. And those of you who rely upon him, give them the place to fill their body. All they come forth, sometimes they'll have a song upon their heart. But when you and I press upon them, sing this one and sing that one, they can't fill their place. And there have been those times where we've come to sing and we've had a burden upon our heart. And we find that when we're given that place, there are those times where others say, well, do this and do the other. And because of the encouragement of our Father, we'd meet those requests. But then you'd find us getting together saying, well, but we missed it. We had this song that we had on our heart, and had we been able to sing it, it would have tied right in with what the minister had to say. But we weren't able to do that. You and I need to allow them to fill their place because they have a rightful place in the body. Oh, as we go along life's pathway, we've got to heed the call and listen to the sound. Those of you who are prayer warriors, are you hearing the sound of the call to battle? There are those places there where maybe you're not out on the forefront, but let it be understood that we're in a battle here today and you have your place to fill. And if you fail to fill it, there'll be a lot of people who'll go down because it won't be as effective as God would have it to be as they go forth. Oh, as we look upon it, teachers, have you heard the sound? What is your purpose when you've got those children and those young people in the Sunday school classes? What is your desire to impart over to them? What is your space there to pray? Lord, give me an anointing to get something into them that will be with them for the rest of their lives. Oh, as we look upon it, I thought about how there have been times where I've worked out in the yard. When I first bought my first house, the front yard was covered solid with goat heads and sand burrs. I got out and I worked hard. Cut them down with the lawnmower, bagged them all up as best I could. Then I came in and tilled up the ground and planted my yard. Thought now I've got it to where I can walk out there barefoot and don't have to worry about getting stuck. But don't you know, years later, I'd still have to be out there sitting on a bucket sometimes pulling goat heads and sand burr plants out of the yard. My point there is that teachers, you need to impart something to those that you have charge of. Maybe they'll not respond today, but somewhere along life's pathway, someone might come along and begin to help break up the fallow ground to where that seed can come back to the top and begin to sprout and bring forth something that will help them as they go along the way. Consider it ministers and pastors. What is your purpose? Is it to nurture and to encourage? Is it to inspire and fan the spark that it might become a flame? Or is it to just be seen and to be the head? To just give counsel just for the sake of giving counsel? As we look upon it, there are many places that need to be filled. And you and I have got to hear the call to that battle to fulfill it as the Lord would have us to do. There are some say, well, I'm not in any of those groups. All right, workers. We sing the song, we will work for Jesus. Are we workers now for Jesus? Everybody says, I'm a worker for Jesus. But let's consider something here. Brother mentioned that the brother shouldn't have been tempted last night concerning his situation. You and I as workers are going to have to meet the call. Not everybody's going to go out there and make that kind of a sacrifice. But there's a place for you and I to support those who are going forth as part of God's mission. That means you and I are going to have to give as we go along life's pathway. Going to have to let up on some things as we go along life's pathway. Going to have to deny ourselves as we go along the way. As you look upon it, there's nothing that won't work that way as we go along this pathway of life. You look at this place right here where there's not someone who gave in beyond measure, beyond the normal expectations in order for this to be here today. You look at the military. I marvel at the airplanes. When I was a young boy, I always wanted to fly. I always had visions of flying one of those F-15s. And I look at them now from an engineering point of view. I look at what all it takes for them to fly, what kind of forces they have to sustain to fly. And then I consider, when you watch them, people like the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds, you find them there. They'll all come out in precision. The pilot gets up in the plane, but there's his mechanic checking different systems with him. When the mechanic looks at everything and he gives him the thumbs up and says it's all ready to go, the mechanic will salute him and then he'll get down and he's going on his way. The point there is that there's a broad-based support for that one plane to fly and to do its mission as it goes along the way. To be the best that there is in the world. There's a lot of people who've had to put in a lot of work, a lot of sweat, a lot of toil, a lot of sacrifice for that plane to do what it's capable of doing. And as you and I go along life's pathway, there's going to have to be others who are going to have to support that one pilot, so to speak, who goes out by the help of the Lord to do and accomplish his mission. We can't sit there and say, well, let him do this, let him do that, let somebody else do it as they go along the way. No, it's a part for all of us to hear that call to the battle that we might meet it as we go along the way. As we consider it there, when those people heard the sound of the trumpet, they moved forward. You didn't see them dallying around. They knew what the call meant and they responded to it. You and I are going to have to do the same. Pray for us. 2 Chronicles, the 13th chapter, starting at the 4th verse. Someone might read for us through verse 17. 2 Chronicles 13, 4 through 17. Let's move quickly.
And if Abijah stood up upon Mount Aram, said, hear me, thou Jeroboam, and all Israel.
Yes.
Ought ye not to know that the Lord God of Israel gave the kingdom over Israel to David forever, even to him and to his sons by a covenant of Saul? Yet Jeroboam, son of Nebat, the servant of Solomon, the son of David, is risen up and hath rebelled against his Lord. And there are gathered unto him vain men, the children of Belial, and have strengthened themselves against Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. Rehoboam was young and tender-hearted, and could not withstand them. And now ye think to withstand the kingdom of the Lord and the hand of the sons of David, and ye be a great multitude, and there are with you golden calves, which Jeroboam made you for gods. Have ye not cast out the priests of the Lord,
yes,
and Aaron, and the Levites, and have made you priests after the manner of the nations of other lands? so that whosoever cometh to consecrate himself with a young bullock and seven rams, the same may be a priest of them that are no God. But as for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. And the priests which minister unto the Lord are the sons of Aaron, and the Levites wait upon their business. And they burn unto the Lord every morning and every evening burnt sacrifices and sweet incense. And the showbread also set thee in order upon the good table, and the candlestick of gold and the lamps thereof to burn every evening, for we keep the charge of the Lord our God, which he hath forsaken him. And behold, God himself is with us for our captain, and his priests with sounding trumpets to cry alarm against you. O children of Israel, fight ye not against the Lord God of your fathers, for ye shall not prosper. But Jeroboam caused an ambushment to come about behind them. So they were before Judah, and the ambushment was behind them. And when Judah looked back, behold, the battle was before and behind. And they cried unto the Lord, and the priest sounded with the trumpet. Then the men of Judah gave a shout, and as the men of Judah shouted, it came to pass that God smote Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And the children of Israel fled before Judah, and God delivered them into their hands. And Abijah and his people slew them with a great slaughter, so there fell down slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men.
All right. Here Abijah, in setting a battle in array against Jeroboam, and he reasons with him, and lets him know that God has given this promise to David as a covenant of salt, something that will last forever. This is going to be, there's no way you can change this, Jeroboam. As we look upon it, God has given us some promises. Just as a covenant of salt, they will be there. Now, whether you and I take advantage of them is another question. But his promises will always be there. And you and I are to rely upon them. We find here that Jeroboam took his own way. And that as he split off with the 10 tribes, the group of Levi was in that group. But he didn't want them for his priests and to lead and to direct the people. So they went on back to Abijah. And we find here that he set them right in their rightful place to carry out their work. And he points out here that we have not forsaken God. You and I can't leave him. We've got to stay with him as we go along the way. We find here that he let them know that God was their captain, that God was their leader, and that they were going to stay with him. And as we go on further here, we find that he had the priest sounding the alarm, getting them ready. Here's, you hear the sound. This is what it means. We're coming forward, and now you're going to have to deal with us. But he points out here, Jeroboam's still going his own way. So he sets some ambushments, and the children of Judah find themselves surrounded. In this day and time, do we not find ourselves surrounded by various things as we go along the way? There are different kind of philosophies and ways of thinking that are being put out, and you find that we're being surrounded as we go along the way. But yet, as we look upon all of this, and maybe it don't look so hopeful, here just as God delivered them when they gave the shout and looked to the Lord, he's going to deliver us if we'll stay with him, if we'll go with him as we go along the way, if we'll go forward in battle when he goes forward, if we'll stay with him, he'll deliver us as we travel in this time world. You and I think sometimes about the writer when he pointed out, I believe it was Elijah's servant, and here came all of the soldiers, and they were surrounding the place and going to take Elijah. And he said, "Master, how shall we do?" And Elijah said, "Lord, open up his eyes. Let him see." And he was able then to see that although he was surrounded, what surrounded him was surrounded by a host of angels, and there was no way they could suffer any defeat. You and I are in a place where it looks like we might be surrounded, and indeed in many ways we are, but nevertheless, let us look, and may the Lord open our eyes to where we can see that there's angels around all the things that are surrounding us as we go along the way. Let's turn quickly to Psalms 18, verses 27 through 40. Someone might also find Isaiah 28, verses 5 and 6, and Matthew 16, verses
13 through 19. Psalms 18, 27 through 40.
Thou wilt save the afflicted people from looking down high looks. For thou wilt light my candle, the Lord my God will light my darkness.
Lord.
For by thee I have run through the truth,
yes.
By my God have I leaped over it all. As for God, his way is perfect, the word of the Lord is tried, he's a buckler to all of those that trust
him. Amen.
For who is God save the Lord? Who is the rock save our God? It is God that girdeth me with strength, maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hind's feet, setteth me upon my high places.
Help us, Lord.
He teacheth my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms. Thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation. Thy right hand hath holden me up. Thy gentleness hath made me great.
Yes.
Thou hast enlarged my steps under me, that my feet did not slip. I have pursued mine enemies and overtaken them, neither did I turn again till they were consumed. I wounded them that they were not able to rise, they are fallen under my feet. For thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle, thou hast subdued under me those that rose up against me. Thou hast also given me the neck of mine enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me.
All right. For thou wilt save the afflicted people. Who's the afflicted people? Those are the ones who through trials and tests have humbled themselves under the hand of the Lord. And he says here that he will save them. As we look upon it, he lets us know here, the writer pointing out, God gave him strength to meet his battles as he went along the way. And he lit his candle. He caused him to prosper, restored him to his rightful place. And we find there that he gave him something that isn't unordinary. It is extraordinary, considering that he was able to run through a troop. By my God have I leaped a wall. David met some things, but you find there that he wasn't saying, oh, woe is me, and I don't know if I can hang on, and it's just going to be more than I can bear. He said, no, by my God, I have run through a troop.
Amen.
By my God, I've leaped over the walls. Oh, as we consider it, it is the only way that we will make it. The brother said that those things that man has come up with will not work. That is because man has nothing to offer. Oh, as you look upon it, there are those places where they put forth their own ways and their own thinking. But you can look in the world today. You can look to those all around you and see that the results do not point out that this is something that you and I want to partake of. Indeed, there are some places where we find people right amongst us saying, why can't we do this? Why can't we do the other? But if you listen to some of them out in the world today, you're finding that they're beginning to say, I don't want it anymore. I want to get away from it. And yet, why would we go to it when others are wanting to get away from it as they go along the way? Look upon it and consider here. He said that his God's way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried, and that he's a buckler to all them that will trust him. His way is without any flaws. It's been tried. It has stood the test of time. And you and I need to rely upon it. Oh, I thought about the old boss man we had. Sometimes when you're trying to design something and it needs to be very stout, he would tell us, you know, we'd say, well, maybe we could try this here. It's something new and it's light and it's supposed to have a lot of strength. And he would use the old axiom he'd give us, when in doubt, make it stout out of what you know about. Well, that told us all we needed to know. Go get the welders, bring in all the heavy I-beams, let's make this thing so we don't have to worry about it caving in on us when we put a lot of weight on it. I'm not talking 200 or 300 pounds. I'm talking 50 tons or something like that. You know, we move some things sometimes that weigh 125 tons, 250, 300,000 pounds. You don't want what's holding it up to give way. You know, so he said, make it stout out of what you know about. God's word is tried, it's true, and it is stout. Sometimes people would tell us, well, that's a little overkill. Yeah, but we don't have to worry about it breaking down, do we? You can get rough with it, and it's still going to be here. Oh, as we look upon it, His word is just as stout as it can be. And for the purposes that it serves for you and I, it's overkill. But he put it in a place where no one could dispute it if they'll truly rely upon it and find that it's just as true as David found here. He said, who is God save the Lord? Who's like him? Think about it and compare them. Weigh it out. There is only one God. Amen. Nobody else is like him. And he said, who is our God, or who is our rock save our God? In other words, this God, who is our rock, is a fountain of continual grace and blessings, and he'll supply our every need as we go along the way. He said, it is God that girdeth me with strength and maketh my way perfect, making our feet like hinds' feet. There have been those places where people feel like I'm in a tight spot. I don't know what's going to happen here. But when they stayed with God, their feet were like hinds' feet, walking sure-footed with peace and stability as they went along the way. And you and I look upon them and marvel and say, I don't see how they're doing it. Oh, it was God that was doing it. They weren't doing it. It was God. And he points out here that the Lord has enlarged my steps under me that my feet should not slip. And he said, thou hast given me the necks of mine enemies that I might destroy them that hate me. Now, I'm not thinking so much about people in general, but I'm thinking about those things that the devil brings against you and I to destroy us. You and I can have the neck of those things and have victory over them as we go along life's pathway. We don't have to be up and down and all around. We don't have to be in a place where it looks like from one day to the next, nobody knows if we're going to make it or not. Those things that we find confronting us, we can have the victory over. I still think about it from time to time when Mary and them came there and said, who's going to roll away the stone? When they got there, the stone was already rolled back. And the writer said the angel was sitting on top of it. You and I can have the neck of some things to where when people come by and say, who's going to set them free? Who's going to help them out of this situation? They can come there and find us with it already taken care of and us sitting on top of it. May the Lord help us as we go along the way. Let's turn to Isaiah, the 28th chapter, verses 5 and 6. If someone has it, read it, please.
That day shall the Lord of hosts be for a crown of glory, and for an eye of truth unto the residue of his people, and for a spirit of judgment to him that sitteth in judgment, and for strength to them that turn the bounds of the gate.
All right. Here we find that the writer was pronouncing some judgments upon those who were supposed to be the people of God. And there were some who in their pride had gotten lifted up because of the blessings God had bestowed upon them. But there were also those who were still hanging on to God. And so he says, in that day, when these judgments come upon these people, in that day, I will be a diadem of beauty to the residue, those that are left. I'll be a spirit of judgment unto them. I'll be their wisdom and their understanding. I'll be a help to them in such a way that others will have to acknowledge that God is blessing them. And in the midst of all of this, when it seems like their brethren were going to be overtaken and taken into captivity, and it looked like they might be next, God was telling them, I'm going to help you. And even though this fire or this storm is coming up close, you're going to be protected. That's what he will be to you and I. And then, in the midst of all of that, he said, I will be strength unto them that turn the battle to the gate. Now, Matthew 16 and 13, down through 19. Someone read, please.
He asked his disciples, saying, who do men say that I am the Son of Man? They said, some say thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. He said to them, but whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, blessed art thou, Simon, for God, for flesh and blood have not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon the rock I will build my church,
yes,
and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of hell, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, Whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.
All right. He said he would be strength to those who would turn the battle to the gates. The gates in those times were places of strength for the city. They were towers where they could defend themselves and yet let their people in for their protection. But then here he says that when people begin to question, who am I? And he told Peter, blessed art thou, favored. God has revealed unto you who I am. And he said, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Now, a lot of times, as we've grown up, I've heard it used, and it left me with the impression that when the deceits, the mechanisms, the schemes of the devil come against us, they won't prevail. But I want to look at it in a little different way. He said he would give them strength to turn the battle to the gates. And the songwriter said, so with courage, press the battle to the gates. There are some places where you and I cannot afford to be on the defensive all the time. It is time for us to take heed to the call. When he gave the call to those Israelites and they moved to their formations, they were going forward. Not hunkering back and trying to take every blow that came their way. You and I need to get in a place where when he says go forward, we will go forward against some of the things that the devil has, be able to reason and understand and deal with people and be able to show them a better way out. Be able to defeat those things for our own benefit as we go along life's pathway. Oh, as we look upon it, he said the gates of hell shall not prevail against it, will not withstand what my church is going to come with. Oh, as we look upon it, you and I are going to have to get into a place where we realize we're dealing with the devil. It's not so much flesh and blood. We can get hung up in, I don't like so-and-so in their ways, and I don't like how this one did the other, and I realize there's some places for us to have some displeasure, but sometimes we're playing word games, and it's just that I don't like them. There's more to it than that. And I hear some people try to cover it up well after they say, well, I don't like their ways. I like them, but I don't like their ways. Their ways are them, and you don't like them, and there's a problem there that needs to be rooted out. Too many people are going along playing word games, and we don't have time for it in this day. Here he said the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You and I need to be aware, be able to see some things, and start rooting it out. You know, this same old boss man, he used to like sometimes it seemed to get into a little battle. He'd come in the mornings rubbing his stomach, and all the rest of us knew it's time to clear out. You didn't want to be around to catch it when he cut loose. Sometimes he'd get into it with the workers, and they'd be right at each other with their fingers in each other's face. Then it was all said and done, he'd have a grin on his face, and he was okay the rest of the day. And that seemed like he just relished the battle. What about you and I? Somebody said, come on, brother. We got somebody over here possessed. Let's go get the devil. Whoa. Well, now, wait a minute, brother. Well, now, I agree everybody shouldn't be involved in that. But you're going to meet some of those things. I think about it at home. I remember one time us young people were standing around and Sister Beverly was there and she said, you know, it's kind of been a while since we had anything happen. It's about time for somebody to come by here possessed or have some other kind of trouble. You know, because we'd have people sometimes come in straight off the street and you could tell they had a problem. They'd come to the altar, they'd get to dealing with them, and you could tell they had a spirit in them. And then Brother Williams might raise up and say, all those that want to go, you need to go on. Those that's going to stay here, you need to be in prayer. And some of us young people, we was, you know, teenagers, 13, 14, 15, we'd all get down and pray. Lord, help them. Lord, bless Brother Wim, Sister Jimmy, and the other sisters, all that was around there trying to deal with them. Pretty soon, something would come out. They'd get to working on the next one. And then when she said that, we all kind of thought, well, I don't know if we need anything like that coming by or not. Now, I'm not saying we're just going to go carelessly run out, devil, where are you, and we're going to root you out. But there are some places where when we need to meet him, we need to meet him. And he needs to be dealt with. Let's turn to Revelation, the 16th chapter. Someone read verses 12 through 16. Someone might find for me Ephesians 6, verses 10 through 18.
And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates.
Yes.
The water thereof was dried up, that the ways of the kings of the east might be prepared. I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are the spirits of devils working miracles.
Yes.
Go forth unto the kings of the earth, and the whole world, and gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth, keepeth his garments. As he walk naked, may see his shame. He gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon.
All right.
We are in a battle right now. The Greek word for that Armageddon, marked a place where the Israelites had some epic battles. Some battles that made great changes in their life and had a great effect upon them and their history. What he's pointing out, it seems to me, is that the devil is marshaling his forces. Heathenism, the philosophy of it, and some of these other things that mark those three spirits are now on the stage. You can find people believing almost anything and putting it forth as something that you ought to believe. You know, it's always amazed me that in this world where people want to say, you can do whatever you want to do, when I start doing what I want to do, all of a sudden now it's time for you to stop and be like us. You know, I wanted to tell one time, y'all don't want nobody telling y'all what not to do. Why do you want to come and tell me what not to do? And just like you want to tell me to get on out of your face, I want to tell you to get off my back. You do what you want to do, I'll go which way I want to go. But now if you're going to bother me, then we're going to engage here. So what is it going to be? Well, there are a lot of philosophies that have come forth. You know, back there in that time amongst the Romans was, you can have any kind of religion you want, just as long as you put it beside ours and we just all right and okay together. Well, you know, sometimes the fellas at work will say some things and I'll tell them, you guys need to quit. Oh, it don't hurt to look as long as you don't touch. Yep, yeah, that's just how Eve got in trouble, looking. Sometimes, well, don't it make you want to do this? No, it don't. Why? Well, first of all, my wife said I better not. Next thing along there, I said, he said you better not too. You better leave that alone. You know, there are a lot of things that are getting themselves together. And we're finding them coming forth as, you don't need to do all of that. You can do this right here, and it's all right. Well, why don't you open your mind and think about this right here? Look at this point, and isn't this logical? I had a history teacher when I was in the ninth grade talking about evolution. And that got kind of hot. She finally told me and said, well, doesn't it seem logical? And isn't there a beauty in how this one thing developed and then it progressed to this and then to this and then to this? I said, no. I said, what I like was he said, let there be light. And there it was. And he said, let there be this here. And there it was. And he said, do this. And there it was. Now, I see some beauty in that. But there are a lot of things, see, that are coming forth.
That's right.
And people are reasoning with themselves. And that's what the devil's using. Deception. Reason. And we'll say, I got it all figured out. And then you start listening. Well, did you think about thus and such? Did you think about the other? You know, I'm going to tell on my wife. She might get me later. We were trying to figure out how to pay the bills. And she was wanting to do something. I said, but baby, the money's not there. Oh, but we got the money. So I finally told her, well, tell you what. If you can figure out how to pay the bills and go do that too, go to it. You better one than I am. So she got the figure. I come home from work. She said, I got it all figured out. I said, okay. So we sit down. And she said, well, see, we can do this here, and we can do that there, and we can do the other, and here's the money to do that. And I said, did you think about this bill? No. Did you think about that bill? No. Did you think about this one? No. Well, see, that's where that money's going. Well, that's kind of the way we are spiritually speaking. I got it all figured out. And then the Lord say, did you think about this? No. Somebody else come along, well, did you think about the other? No. Well, but I still ought to be able to do what I want to do. Well, go on and do what you want to do, but don't be trying to blame it on the Holy Ghost. Don't blame it on somebody else. Just come on out and say, I want to do this, and this is the way I'm going. You know, just be upfront about it. We got too many people who want to label it, well, the Lord told me. The Lord impressed me. And I'm like, okay, I guess I missed it. Lord help me, I must not be seeing something. And then when it all blows up, well, the saints didn't do this. The saints didn't come and help me. The saints didn't do the other. You know, to be downright truthful about it, well, I'm going to say it like this. To be downright truthful about it, it don't make any difference hardly what the saints don't do. Because you're the one responsible. You are ultimately responsible. And many times the saints did do, but you and I won't accept it that way. And we'll just, well, because it didn't come like I wanted it to, and they didn't pat me on the back just right, then I don't want to hear it. So I have somebody tell me, well, I want to do this and I don't want to do that. And I say, well, why don't you do it like this? And in that way, it won't affect your family. And if this don't work out, you can just keep right on. I don't want to do it that way. I don't know what else to tell you. You done got the end of my rope real quick. So I don't know what to tell you. You just have to go on your own way. Well, they're still in the same place. Well, no, I take that back. They're worse off. And not because they didn't do what I said do. They're worse off because they did what they wanted to do and didn't really listen to some others. I wasn't the only one telling them how to do a little better. Let's move on. Ephesians, the 6th chapter, verses 10 through 18.
Be strong in the Lord and the power of his might.
Yes.
Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil.
Yes.
For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of the world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places.
Hold it right there. Now, finally, ultimately, when it's all said and done and you done boiled it down, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. You and I are not going to go out there and muscle up on the devil. Just not going to do it. So we've got to rely upon God. And he said, put on the whole armor. Put everything on. No sense in saying I'm going to go out there with just the sword. No sense in saying I'm going to go out there with just the breastplate and the helmet. Take it all. Because you're going to have to stand against the wiles, against the schemes, against the imaginations, against his designs and his plans that he's putting forth against you. And then realize we're not wrestling with flesh and blood. The brother said it's too much carnality, too much ambition. Too much politics. We're not dealing so much with each other. We're dealing with something else.
And when you look in there, he says against principalities, against powers. You look in Webster, when you look at the plurality of that, it says theological and order of angels. Now, I'll put it this way. It says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against demons, against spirits, against angels that the devil has at his beck and call to try to do damage to you and I. That's what we're dealing with. Everybody gets, some people get caught up in that other person. Well, you can get caught up in the other person and lose out. And they make it in. We're not dealing so much with the flesh and blood. I realize the devil will try to use them because he has to have them for instruments just like God needs us for instruments as well. I understand that. But we need to look beyond that. And it's in high places. Right amongst the church world. Read on, brother.
To you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about the truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness,
yes,
and your feet shod with preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, take the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked.
Yes.
And take the helmet of salvation with the sword of spirit, which is the word of God. Praying always with all prayer and supplication of the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all preservation and supplication of all saints.
All right. Take the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. Now, the writer says, in the last days, perilous times shall come. Why do you think it's perilous? Because there's more crime than there's ever been? Because people are just subject to walk in and start shooting indiscriminately at everybody for some unknown reason? Well, that might be part of it. You know, to me the main thing is that we're in perilous times because we're dealing with something that can take your crown, make you lose your soul. You know, it's dangerous in the world. I understand that. We were headed home from church one night, wintertime, ice and snow on the ground. We stopped at the stop sign. Next thing we know, somebody pulled up behind us while we was waiting for this young man to get out of the car and go into his house. They pulled up from behind us. I didn't even see him. They had the lights turned off. Next thing I knew, this hand stuck out the window and started firing shots at him as he ran in the house. And I'm telling my wife and the children, get on down, because we was in a spot where we couldn't just back up and get out of there. And I didn't know whether he was going to turn around and start spraying at us or not. Now, that's dangerous, but all that could have done was taken us out of here. Couldn't have made us lost our crown. Because if we were ready to go then and those bullets found us, we'd have just been gone to glory. But it's a dangerous time because we're living in a world where people are putting forth a lot of deceptions in different ways. And not only that, when the devil comes to try to reason with you and I, if you're not careful, we will deceive ourselves. We'll get to reasoning and thinking we got it all figured out. And all we're doing is fooling ourselves. And don't you know sometimes the devil don't just have to stand there and just reason with us all the time? Sometimes he can just... You ever seen something just kind of freewheel and spin once you got it going? You know, I was speaking about heavyweights. We have a nuclear plant that's working up there. We're taking the generator apart, pull out the rotor. And it's a pretty heavy piece of equipment. And it's amazing to me that that thing can just turn so easy. We was taking out, checking the clearances on a turbine rotor also, weighed about 150,000 pounds. Not very much breeze at all in the building. You couldn't hardly even feel it. But I'm checking the readings and something not looking right. And then it gets to looking, and this big old heavy piece of iron and steel sitting there supported on each end, and it's turning. Just ever so slightly, but it's turning. Once you got it broke free, you can sit there and push it yourself. 150-some thousand pounds,
And you didn't have to strain yourself to push on it. We can get to be that way when the devil deals with us. He'll come along and just kind of put something out there, and we'll just kind of start to turn. Reasoning with ourselves, and he just kind of sit back and just let us, you know. You know how sometimes my mother-in-law, she can talk. She get on the phone, I'll answer, she get to talking. All I got to say is, I don't have to say much. That's the way we get to be sometime, and the devil just sitting there, and we just are going, we just are going, Pretty soon we got it all figured out, now I'm going to go do this. And we get way out somewhere and get in a whole lot of trouble. See, we're wrestling against those kind of things. So he tells us, put on the whole armor. You know, we've got to get ready. We ought to be ready for the battles that are coming our way. The foe is armed and he's deadly. When the young man was flying his patrol there over Bosnia, they didn't know that those people were armed. Now, you would think that in that situation, knowing who they're dealing with, that he would have had his radar on, his missiles primed and ready, and would have been ready to take evasive measures. But somebody said they don't have anything. So what happens? He gets out there and somebody fires off a heat-seeking missile, and he can't do much about it. And they see the plane go up in smoke, and they don't know whether he made it out or not. We get to be that way. The foe is armed and he's deadly. And we'll be just kind of tooling along, not really tuned in to our spiritual radar, not really sitting there with our weapons all armed and ready. And then we'll get hit with something. And somebody will say, well, I saw them get hit, but did they bail out? Well, I don't know. I don't know. He's not playing. And you and I can just kind of lollygag along and you know, not really be where we ought to be. He said here, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth. The loins is a very vital area to the man, a woman. But it is a place of strength. It's a place where the organs are situated to allow him to take in food and nourishment, digest it for the strength of his body. Here he said, have it girt about with truth. The very strength that you and I have needs to be bound up in such a way that we'll be prepared for hard labor. Yeah. You know, when the weightlifters and some of these workers get ready to do something, what do? Grab their belt, pull it up around their waist, pull it up real tight, and then they can go grab it, start bench pressing or doing whatever they want to do. You and I need to have our loins girt about with truth. Yeah. Now, the writer Webster said girt about with truth means being ready to stand or take a test of endurance. What does that tell us? That means we're going to meet something. That's why he's telling us to have it girt about with truth. Something that, when in doubt, we can make it stout out of what we know about. Not some philosophy somebody's giving me, and I don't know if this is going to work here or not. They say there's exceptions to every rule. What did the brother tell us the other day? This is the best counseling book you can get. The best advice book you can get. You hear people making a whole lot of money being financial planners for somebody. There's some finance in the book. The Lord will help us if we'll gird it on and take it. He said here, having on the breastplate of righteousness. To me that means live it, experience it, and maintain your integrity. And the writer said integrity is something that can't be influenced by outside forces. We need to have something on us that will keep us to where we're not so easily influenced. He said here, your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. A person who has peace in their heart, that's a pretty steady, stable person. They don't have to get caught up in all the nuances of life. You know, we deal with some things at work. You find that when people get insecure, they start doing and saying things. They want nobody to think they don't know nothing. They start getting nervous and fidgety, but they're putting on a front, try to answer everything. They'll come to me and I'm just, I don't know. I just tell them, well, what about thus and such? I don't know. And a supervisor asked me the other day, well, we got this spec. We got to do some checking on the gas orifice meter plates. And what does it say? I haven't seen a copy of it yet. I don't know. Well, we need to do this and that. I'm aware of that. But we got to get this done. We'll get it done. Well, but it says this and this, and I don't know if we need to check the meters or if we need to check this and check the other. I'll find out. And after all his getting worked up, you know what you had to do? Which is what I told him. He said, the only thing I can see that you're going to do is check the diameter of the bore and make sure it's true. Check the edges of it and make sure they're straight. And if they're not within tolerance, we're going to have to get some new ones. Now, we get the people to come in, they help us check it. And what do? Check the diameter, make sure they're straight, find out they're out of tolerance, so I ordered a couple of them. You see, we can get all bound up and nervous and fidgety, and then we'll just, mind takes off, imagination goes into overdrive, and now we got a whole lot of stuff to deal with that don't even exist. And after all of that, it turned out to be a little simple job. And he was all worked up for nothing. You know, and it's something when he gets to the point where the people tell you, if he ever goes, we hope you're our boss. And I'm telling them, I don't want the job. I got too many other things to do now, and I don't need that. Well, having our feet shod with the gospel of the preparation of peace. Now, something else we take note of there. You go back to my yard and those sin birds. Had someone stand with me once for a few days. And I told him I was getting ready to go to work. I said, now, don't you go out in my backyard with no shoes on. Because I guarantee you, the first step you take off of that sidewalk, you're going to get your feet stuck. There's sin birds back there and there's goat heads. And I haven't changed it like I changed the front yard. So you be careful. Well, I go on to work and I come back. How your day been? Oh, pretty good. He said, you know, I was going to go back out there in your backyard and look at your garden. And I took one step off of that sidewalk and said, yeah, and you got your feet stuck, didn't you? I sure did. I had several of them in my foot. I said, I tried to tell you. I was serious. They were just that thick out there. You know, we try to go in battle with the devil and our feet are hurting, sore, creaky and everything. Because we don't have no peace on them, we ain't going to make it. You can't go when your feet are hurting. Let's talk about that little toe. You let me step on that real good and we'll just see how far you get. You just can't do it. So we've got to have something on our feet. And it not only works down there where we can go forward and do the things the Lord would have us to do, but it works down in here where we don't get all bound up in knots. Wondering and worrying about everything that won't happen. We were growing up, my little brother had a saying he picked up from school, said, ifs go in the chicken house and hardly ever hatch. And I find that more and more to be true. He said here, above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. The Amplified says, missiles. Now, the devil does have some darts. And if we're not careful, he'll get us with one of them. And we'll get off and we'll get to thinking things, seeing things that ain't there, thinking this and that and the other. And I'm going to say this. I've thought about this. But I'm not going to touch too much on it today. Sometimes we'll carry the darts for him. What do you mean? What I mean is that sometimes you'll run into things and you find out somebody's done said something that's not even true. And you having to deal with it and people looking funny at you. And you wonder, how did that get started? I run into something one time a few years ago. When I stand by myself, I had an unlisted phone number. But this person called me from way far away and said, I heard blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, don't know nothing about that. That's not true. And then I said, how did you get a hold of that? Furthermore, how did you get a hold of my phone number? I thought, my sister must have told them, because they wouldn't tell me how they got it. I thought, my sister must have told them. So I thought, when I get off this phone, I'm going to call my sisters. I got off the phone and called my sisters. No, we ain't told nobody your phone number. To this day, I still don't know how they got a hold of it. And I don't know how what they came up with got started. But we'll help carry some of those things instead of letting them drop. And he hits us with those little things, and we'll get to thinking. And the devil will just let us go on with it. But then he's also using some missiles, too. And we still have that same shield that we've got to use for all of those things. And he said, take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of the Lord. Salvation will protect us if we'll let it. It is for us, then, to know that it's there, rely on what we know about it, and some of those things we don't know, we need to leave alone. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to come to some understanding, because I'm one that believes that you ought to have some conviction about what you're doing. Why we do what we do. It is good to take counsel sometimes when we don't understand and take it because someone said it. But in all of that, we also need to be saying, Lord, help me to understand why they told me what they told me so I can stand on it more sure-footedly and not be moved off if that's the right thing to do. And we also need to know so when we do go out and deal with others and we start pulling down some of these schemes and imaginations that people have, we can tell them based on our experience something that we know as to why this works the way it does. He said here, and we'll consider, would you go out in battle with no helmet on? Would anybody do that? Why do we reason off our salvation then? And then go out there thinking we're going to make it. It don't work, do it. He said here, the sword. You and I need to know something about the sword, about His Spirit and His Word. That's what we got to fight with. And we should know something about it. Make use of it. Get accurate with it. He ended it all by saying, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. What does that say? Pray, pray, and pray again. As we go along this pathway of life, we need a lot of prayer warriors. Brother Williams used to tell us, don't let nobody pray for you more than you praying for yourself. So you can't. The brother pointed out how we like to dump it all off on the ministers. Are you praying for me? Well, somebody needs to be able to pray the prayer of faith. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Why aren't you in the place where you can pray it? Why is it all to be left for those ministers to do it? And I mentioned about the workers. Let me touch on that. Forgive me now. We can sit around, put on the front and be spiritual. come time to do some work, and ain't hardly nobody there. Same people all the time. You know, sometimes like it's, well, I'm probably going to get in trouble. Come time to do something at home, some of them sisters have to get on us, which is good. But my wife one time told me, said, well, I can about tell you who's going to show up. I can about tell you when they're going to show up. And so we had that work day, and when I got home, she said, who showed up? And I told her. And she said, so-and-so showed up about this time. Yes, he did. Workers, it's not all for just one or two people to do. There's a lot to be done. We got to heed the call. Philippians, the first chapter, verses 3 through 11. And someone might find for us Ezekiel 33, verses 1 through 7, and we'll be done. Philippians 1, verses 3 through 11. Read, please.
Every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, you all make requests with joy.
Yes.
For your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you,
yes,
perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart. As much as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, ye all are partakers of my grace. For God is my refuge, how greatly I long after you, all from the bowels of Jesus Christ. This I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment, that you may approve things that are excellent, that you may be sincere without offense, the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God.
All right. Paul greeting the Philippians here, and he says, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. In other words, I have this confidence that what God has started, he will complete in you right until the very time he takes you home. You and I need to let the work be finished in us, which means we're going to have to stay in there. We're going to have to be committed. We're going to have to keep toiling. And when we feel like we can't go no farther, we go a little further still. Here he said he would complete it. He would perform it. But you and I have to allow him to do so. And he goes on and says, I pray that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and in all judgment. Why? So that you and I can approve. So that you and I can say, I found it so. So that you and I can tell someone that this will work. And here's why it will work. And I've been down that path. And here's where he led me. And here's the results. And now you can decide for yourself if God is really true to his word. And if he's alive and well today. Here, he wanted them to approve some things that were excellent. Not something that was ragged, tattered. But to come to know some real things about God. That they might be sincere. Now, we use that, well, I'm sincere. In other words, I'm serious. But the writer said, serious. Sincere. How are we about that? How serious are we about God? How serious are we in meeting the call? From this standpoint, the Latin for that is sinceritas. Means without wax. They speak of clarified honey. That means that all the wax has been taken out. Could he say that about us? Lord, I'm serious about living for you. All the wax been taken out? In another place it says, the Greek part of it is, I judge in the splendor of the sun. People who in those times would sell items like cloth, would hold it up into the sun and look through it to see if they could find any defaults, flaws. Then if they couldn't, they'd buy it and go sell it and make trade with it. When we speak about, Lord, I'm a worker for you. I will work for you. By thy blessed word obeying, Lord, I prove my love sincere. When he holds it up in the splendor and light of his gospel and his spirit checks us out, does he find us without flaws? That's something that each one of us will have to answer for ourselves. Ezekiel 33, verses 1 through 7. Read, please.
All right.
Yes.
He heard the sound of the trumpet and took not warning.
All right.
His blood shall be upon him. But he that taketh warning shall
deliver his soul.
But if the watchman see the sword come, and blow not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come, and take any person from among them, he is taken away in his misery. But his blood will I require at the watchman's hand.
Yes.
So thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman upon the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me.
All right. The point here to me is, heed the warning, hear the call. Not because I said so, but we've heard it expressed in various ways here. Prepare the way. Seek to become more spiritual minded. In other words, you and I must get ready for battle. We must dig and learn and apply ourselves and teach our children and confront the devil. We're going to have to hear some things and do some digging. And when the brother said, we need to seek to be spiritual, I thought, uh-oh, I know what's going to happen now, because I've found it to be so. Each person that makes that effort is going to start running into some things. And if you don't have your battle gear on, you're going to have some trouble. You know, I told somebody the other day, I've mentioned it before at home, I can tell when I'm getting ready to run into something. I can be going to work, and the Lord start talking to you, you need to work on this. You need to do the other. Well, Lord, all right, I'm going to try to learn more about that. I'm going to try to do this. And I've got a purpose in my mind. When I get home tonight and I get this or that done, I'm going to sit down where I got some time and I'm going to do whatever it might be. I'm going to get started that way. And then when I get home, my wife will say, guess what? This one called. That took place. Something else broke down. And it always is something that, well, that shouldn't take long to fix, and then it takes a few days. You ever run into that? Or you get there and you get to work and you're dealing with some people and everything goes wrong and people all up in arms and fussing at you and you didn't have nothing to do with it. You're going to meet some things. Why? Because he, the devil, has already arrayed himself in battle. He doesn't even want us to get started along that way. You and I are going to have to deal with it. We're going to have to teach our children. Taking them to church on Wednesday night, Friday night, whenever you have Bible study, prayer meeting, maybe you have it on different nights. Sunday school is not enough. There's some places for some devotion at home. There's some times where you need to answer their questions. and not just lightly either. You need to dig into it and make sure they got a full and a complete answer to their satisfaction. And they need to see some examples. Some real examples. Not an example of, well, they're going to have a work day, but I'm not going and the others can go. That won't do. Not an example where you need to pray, but they don't ever see you pray. My children admonish me when it comes to praying. My oldest daughter, I'm tell on her. You have to watch her. Come nighttime, she's done her schoolwork and everything else. You have to watch her because sometimes she'll go to sleep on her knees. You have to make sure she finished praying and get on up and get in the bed. She could be tired, but she'll be on her knees. The little boy, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning when you come in. And you want to just flop in the bed. He run, finally get in his pajamas. If he isn't really just totally out of it, he'll come back in the bedroom and get on his knees. You come in, what you coming in for? Get down on his knees. Go ahead and pray, son. We'll be with you. You know, we need it on all fronts. In word and in learning, in example and in application. But it will only come if you and I will heed the call. Pray for me that I'll do the same.